All right, you've got it on KHUM. We're 10 minutes after 9 o'clock, and our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign continues. Week number 2 now getting underway, dealing with sexualized violence, sexualized assault here in Humboldt County. And joining us here in the studio, a guest we've had on many times during during this campaign over the years, Paula Arrowsmith-Jones from North Coast Rape Crisis Team. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, I'm happy to be here, Cliff.
And again, I apologize for what happened last year.
Your problem.
I'm not the one who caused the accident, but it was because of me inviting you to be here that you were on the road when you got hit.
It was a bad day, but things are good now.
Yeah, and you're still going through some surgery to correct.
Yeah, I'm still healing.
Still healing from that, but
talk about healing.
Yes, indeed. So your job, with North Coast Rape Crisis Team, you're dealing with sexualized violence all the time. That is kind of what you deal with there.
That's true. We are a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week organization, and sometimes people ask us, "Is that really necessary here in beautiful Humboldt and Del Norte counties?" But sadly it is, because there is no community where there isn't sexual assault happening. And so we hear from people every day.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And this cuts across all, communities, mm-hmm. all pristine, beautiful communities and, deep inner cities, and, all socioeconomic, lines are crossed here with this.
Absolutely.
And one thing that we should touch on probably right away, and we've talked about this before, but it bears mentioning again, is the stereotypical sexual assault or rape is the person laying in wait, hiding in the bushes, the stranger attacking someone. And while that does happen, that is by far the rare incident.
Right. That would comprise probably less than 10% of all sexual assaults. Most of the time, the perpetrator in some way knows, has made contact with the person that they assault. And that could be a close person, like family, friend. It could be someone in a relationship, a partner, or at least somebody that you're acquainted with, that you've met through school, through work, through social activities. And it makes sense, because sexual assault is almost always done in secret and in privacy. And we tend to be in situations where we would be alone with somebody when it's somebody that we know.
A true violation of trust is
absolutely
what it generally is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's looking for a moment of vulnerability, and any human being could be in a moment of vulnerability, and zeroing in on that and breaking the trust that exists and violating that person, exploiting that situation of vulnerability.
So with your organization, North Coast Rape Crisis Team, what's the most common type of incident that you're dealing with here in Humboldt County?
I would say that it's hard to generalize, but certainly a very high rate would be those that are where alcohol or other drugs have been used as a weapon against the person that is assaulted. And I phrase it that way because it's important to know it's not alcohol or other drugs does not cause the violence. But when someone is under the influence of a drug, they're more vulnerable in that moment, and someone who is predisposed to exploit the situation will target them. And we see that particularly when you're talking about teenagers and people of college, of the usual college age. So lots of the assaults on campus at HSU and CR, and lots of the high school situations we deal with, alcohol or other drugs are involved.
So would you say there's more instances of the perpetrator being on drugs, or perhaps the victim who has lost inhibition from drugs?
Yeah, it's more that the person who is targeted, the victim of the crime, is under the influence. Now, the perpetrator usually has orchestrated that in some way. They either have gotten that person under the influence, or they have sat back and waited and watched, say at a party scene or something, and when they see that somebody is impaired, then they move in on them. Now, the perpetrator might also be under the influence, but generally what we see is they may have had a beer or two, and the person that they're targeting is so intoxicated that they might not even know exactly what's going on.
Now, the interesting thing is that this type of behavior was not only tolerated, it was almost encouraged. If you take a look at some old movies where, you know, a man would, you know, get the girl drunk and then take advantage of her. And, you know, you kind of look at these now and you're going, oh my God, that's rape.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say even in popular culture now, there are still a lot of those images that promote the idea of sex as something that can be taken and stolen. And boys being really encouraged to aggress. And certainly, you know, something important to say is that while most rapists are men, most men are not rapists. And so somehow most of our boys growing into men are able to resist the images of popular culture and operate in the world in a mutually respectful way. However, the number of boys and men that fall prey to this idea of hypermasculinity and that sex is something that they have a right to and that they have a right to take, there's a lot of those guys out there too. And of course, there are female perpetrators, especially when you're talking about child sexual abuse. And so perpetrators and those who are victimized come in every gender identity.
Now, one thing, interesting talk I had last week with Professor Maxwell Schnur, it was, you know, he brought up the term date rape, which kind of is like backpedaling rape, is the way he put it. It's still rape.
It is. And the term, when it originally came into the vernacular, was helpful because people at that time only had the concept of stranger jumping out from behind bushes.
Right.
And so it was an effort to bring forward the idea that, no, this happens within the context of friendships and relationships and acquaintances. However, the downside of the term is that it became a way for people to kind of say there's real rape, as in the violent with a weapon stranger rape, and then there's these other less important things. And you can't measure trauma. And the violation of trust that happens when it's an acquaintance or a friend, or let alone a partner, is huge. And so we can't really measure it against some other kind of trauma.
True. I mean, the threat of death, you know, versus someone intoxicated and not in control and not able to say what's on their mind, they're both still rape.
Exactly. And there's a lot of rapes by non-strangers that are extremely life-threatening, especially within the framework of domestic violence,
Absolutely.
Intimate partner violence. And also, I mean, we talked to many survivors that it was someone they knew who very much made them feel that their life was in that person's hands, literally. And you can't know unless you're in the moment what that feeling is like. And that sometimes people are forced to do things that they would not otherwise do. They don't want to do. They may feel they have to kind of acquiesce to the situation, and that's not consent. And I'm glad Max was on the program because we're doing a lot of really great work at HSU around prevention, but also around changing policies and responses so that it's possibly going to be more possible for survivors to come forward and know that people are going to understand that they didn't bring this on themselves.
Yeah, the reality is that any time that there is not willing consent, it's rape.
It's rape. Right, and that consent has to be knowing and it has to be free will. And free will would be a situation where you really do have all of your options open. So if there's any kind of threat, force, fear, use of a weapon, anything like that, there can't be free will consent.
Or retaliation of some kind.
Exactly.
Even if it has to do with maybe a work situation.
That's right. Some kind of power dynamic, a sexual harassment situation. And there can't be knowing consent if somebody is in any way mentally impaired. And that could be through a medical condition, it could be through a disability, or it could be the most common situation through being under the influence of something.
Now, with all of this said, this brings up a topic that a lot of people get confused about, and people bring it up to me all the time. How can that really be rape because they're married? How can there be, there is implied consent if they're married. So how can there be a sexual assault if there is a marriage?
You're right. A lot of people are confused about that. But as far as I know, at least I of all the weddings I've been to, there isn't a vow that says you can have sex with me anytime that you want to, no matter what. So people think of it as implied because you're entering into officially sanctioned intimate relationship. But if you think about it, anybody who's ever been in any kind of intimate relationship, there are times where you want to do any number of things with your partner and other times where you don't. And you never surrender your right to have a limit and have a boundary and have that be respected. And who more would you want your boundary respected by than the person who supposedly loves you? And that's where that breach is. That's where that real violation is, in thinking that, well, you've had sex with me before, so I get to do anything I want to you. Now, sex is meant to be a mutually shared experience, not something that somebody demands. It just like any activity in a marriage, you don't, just because you're married doesn't mean that the other person gets to dictate everything to you.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, there has to be a fresh agreement anytime something like that is entered into.
That's
right. Even if you are married.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly within long-term relationships, married or otherwise, there are times where people feel more and less sexual, and they may choose to have sex with their partner because the partner wants to, and they're okay with it. And then there are, and that's fine. And people do that. They do it with when they're enthusiastic to have sex, and they do it when it's just okay with them. But then there are the times where it's not okay, or there's a particular sex act that's being demanded. And to know that just because you have sex with somebody doesn't mean that there are no limits or boundaries. You still have the right to say, this is what I enjoy, and this is what I don't enjoy, and I don't want to do the things that I don't enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And in any relationship, communication is key. You need to actually communicate.
That's right. And if you think about it, most of us, we're bombarded with sexual and many violent sexualized images through media, et cetera. But we're not really given lots of opportunities to build our skills in communicating, especially verbally communicating about sex with a partner or a potential partner. People tend to have sex more than they actually talk to their partner. And partner, whether that's a one-night hookup or a long-term relationship or something in between, the person that you're engaged in the sexual activity with, you may have never had a conversation with them about what you enjoy and don't enjoy and what they enjoy and don't enjoy. And so part of our work is with youth and adults is to just ask yourself, what would it be like if I actually talked with my partner? And knowing that that can be sexy. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be fun to explore together in this thing we're doing together.
This is where organizations like Spirit Change really help. Because they open up that dialogue and they make it where it's, because you're dealing with teenagers who have a hard time communicating with each other anyway. You know, talking about topics like this are almost a taboo, and this kind of strips the taboo, and it's like, you know, communicate.
Right. And of course, they learned that fear of talking about it from us, from the adults, right?
Right.
And Spare Change, is a awesome program that we fully support and partner with. And similarly, the Check It program at HSU, which is focused on bystander intervention and having each other's backs, being and building a caring community, thinking of community maybe as Martin Luther King said, a beloved community. So if we think of community in that way, then we actually care about each other and thinking about the ways we might step in to reduce the risk of violence happening. And that, through that program, although it's focused primarily on bystander intervention, it has created a lot of opportunity for students at HSU to actually talk about the difference between healthy sexuality and violence that is sexualized. And there's a huge difference between those things.
Absolutely. And we'll be checking in with Check It and with Spirit Change later in the campaign. And you brought up a really good point. Sexuality and sexualized violence, you know, often, and they are really two different things. I mean, the sexualized violence often gets confused with sex and the sex act, but it's violence. The word violence is
That's
there.
Right.
And it is an act of violence. It's not an act of love.
Absolutely. Love does not enter into it. It
no.
is the message of every rapist, whether that is somebody abusing a child, or it's in a partnership, or it's a stranger, or an acquaintance. Really, the message of every rapist is, I matter and you don't. I take and you must give. So it's positioning oneself in a hierarchical way of higher than. So it's power over somebody and control of somebody. Now, there may be sexual gratification for the perpetrator, but it's important to understand that sexual gratification in the context of power over domination, right? Without that other person's consent. And so, because I'm not talking about when people mutually play
right.
with power dynamics, I'm talking about when somebody is taking that which is not being freely given. So there may be sexual gratification, but that's, you know, coming out of that need to be in that higher position. And that's the thing that's really important for people to understand. Rape
it's all
is not
dominance.
That's right. And rape is not about bad sex. It is an act of violence that is sexualized.
Absolutely. And that gets back to, again, the dynamic in a where you have a relationship,
mm-hmm.
you know, where something is being taken without consent. You know, it's the power issue. It's the, you know, I matter, you don't, this
right.
is mine, I deserve this, I'm entitled.
Exactly. And entitlement and privilege are really important words when we think about sexualized violence and all of the issues of intimate partner violence.
And that's how, you know, it often is a component in domestic violence is this kind of dynamic.
Yeah, the statistics are that the majority of battered women are also being sexually abused in some fashion. And many children who are living in homes where domestic violence is occurring are witnessing or having knowledge of one of their parents being sexually abused as well as physically abused by that other adult. And the children themselves, of course, are at higher risk of being abused, including being sexually abused, because often one of the threats made against the adult partner is, if you don't do what I demand sexually, I will do this towards one of your children. And so it's important for people to realize that when those dynamics are at play, children are at risk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as we said, this is absolutely part of the whole dynamic of domestic violence, and you know when children are involved, you know that makes it a whole other thing. Where oftentimes, you know, you would say, you know, why would a woman stay in a mm-hmm. situation like this? Oftentimes, you know, to protect these children.
Yeah, and the better question really is, why would he, assuming the batter is a he, do that? In fact, there's a book entitled that, Why Does He Do That? Rather than, which is an effort by a person, a doctor who, Lundy Bancroft, who works with batters over decades, of reframing and really getting us to think about, this is not a question of why someone stays, it's a question of why does that person take that action. And that's the same whether you're talking about in domestic violence or a rape, even at the hands of a stranger. Often a woman in particular will be asked, well, why did you walk down that street? Or why did you go there? Why didn't you do this or that? Instead of asking the better question of who did that person think they were to attack you in that way? And it's more helpful to survivors if we can reframe that.
Absolutely. Well put. And speaking of that, the it's good to dispel myths as well. We've talked about this many times on the show, but it's, you know, we have fresh audiences all the time. And again, you've got the image of the perpetrator as this, you know, hairy ogre, who, you know, you can recognize in a lineup instantly. There's your rapist. That looks like a rapist. When in reality, they come in all shapes, sizes. You know, oftentimes, as incredible as it may seem, you may see an upstanding member of society, someone who does good in the community, yet this aspect of their personality is still there.
Absolutely. And that's what's so confusing for all of us and confusing for the survivor is how is it that this person who is doing good things in the world can think they have the right and feel that entitlement to do this, to take somebody's body in that way and harm them in that way. And it doesn't make sense. And yet we know that it is. It's the reality. Most rapists, they're not walking around looking like, oh, there's a scary dude. They are our neighbors, our mentors, our employers, our employees.
And too often, a really trusted person.
Yes, and especially when you're thinking about violence towards children, often the adult is either a close family member, a parent or other family member in a trust position, or somebody who puts themselves in a trust position type of career. So they have access to those children through that trust relationship. And that's also the case for people that end up in domestic violence situations, as often the batterer is, to the outside world, seems like a nice guy. And so you are attracted to them naturally. And then it's when it's at home and in private that those power dynamics start to play out.
Well, with all these things, the commonality is the privacy, the isolation and the secrecy.
Yes.
All this stuff takes place outside of the eyes of everybody else. So we don't know that these people really are what they are.
Right. And so I would encourage your listeners that if someone is telling you that they've been hurt by another person, and you might think to yourself, I don't think that could be true because
not this person.
He's a nice guy or she's a nice woman or whatever, is to let yourself understand that you just don't know.
Yep.
And it might be hard to believe, but certainly we at Rape Crisis come from a place of believing survivors. Our whole purpose is to create a safe enough space where people can know that they can be listened to, be believed, not be judged, not be told what to do or how to think or feel. That's what we do on our 24-hour hotline, is be there to listen. That's what we do in our counseling services.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is probably the reason behind mandatory reporting. You know, any of us who teach or are in many different positions are mandatory reporters. I think because we can be fooled also.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, well, that does not sound right, but this person is saying this, and therefore I must report it. Because that veneer of, you know, this person, we can't possibly believe what this person is saying because the person they're talking about has a halo over them.
Right. And we just have to be wiser than that. Mm-hmm. Human beings are complex. And not only can there be a veneer or a mask, so somebody is intentionally looking good while doing harm, there's also the reality that the human being can be a combination of positive and negative qualities, right? I mean, that's true for all of us, and this would be in an extreme. So you could have someone who actually does good work in the community, for example, and is a predator. And those two things are both true, and it's so important for us to understand that the fact that they might tell funny stories, or I like them, or they do a good job, doesn't have anything to do with whether they are willing to violate another human being. We have to look below the surface.
Absolutely. And this has been a good tee up for the week. And before I forget, let's make sure you give out all your resource information for North Coast Rape Crisis Team.
Yes. So we have two hotlines, one for Humboldt and one for Del Norte. The Humboldt County hotline is 707-445-2881, and the Del Norte hotline is 707-465-2851. And I also wanted to give a shout out to all the active service and veterans out there, given that it's Veterans Day, to say that we work with and understand the issues of the traumas of sexualized violence within a combat situation, and would want to support and extend our services to service members, active and veterans. And as well as one of the things that we've seen come up in recent years is service members who had pre-existing trauma in their lives, and then when in combat situations had those experiences sort of brought back to the surface of their memories. And to know that whatever situation you might be dealing with, that if you are an active service member or a veteran, that in addition to the veteran services here in the community, the North Coast Rape Crisis Team is here to serve you as well.
Wonderful. And as we said, the overarching topic is sexualized violence, sexualized assault here in Humboldt County. And tomorrow, Paula will be here again,
that's
making
right.
the trip. We're going to be looking at something that we haven't addressed as a standalone topic, which is definitely worth looking at, especially this time of year. And that is, sexualized violence in the trim scene.
Yes.
Because one of the things that makes this kind of abuse possible is isolation,
mm-hmm.
which goes hand in hand with the trim scene.
Exactly, because we're living in this sort of quasi-legalized, very confusing, behind-the-scenes kind of activity that is a big part of our local economy.
Is. And we should say that the vast majority of organizations do not, have this kind of a violation of trust going on, but it does happen.
Right. And so, we won't be tomorrow making any comment on the industry mm-hmm. as a whole. The reason it's important to talk about is because of the secrecy that is kind of imposed by virtue of the situation, exploitation of workers in many ways
is very possible.
And we certainly have served many people who were, doing their work, trimming or assisting with growing, and were vulnerable to the actions of the person that they were employed by or someone in the group. And that's what we want to talk about, is that vulnerability and how they might be able to reach out for assistance.
And that will be tomorrow on our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. And that will be right around 9 o'clock, so be sure you tune in for that. Should be a fascinating talk. And I would like to say a big thank you to Schmidbauer Building Supply for underwriting our campaign this year.